I'm Jordan.
And I'm Rosanna.
And on this podcast, we explore how to take life off autopilot
and relentlessly pursue a life worth living
together. Hello, and welcome to episode 5 of the Relentless Pursuit podcast. We're glad you're tuning in once again, and this topic is one we've really been looking forward to talking about. The title of today's episode is The Man in the Arena.
I think you always say that this is one we've always been looking forward to.
We wouldn't be a show if we weren't looking forward
to it. I hope you're looking forward to it, too. So today's podcast title comes from Theodore Roosevelt's speech entitled Citizenship in a Republic. And it's actually a 35-page speech. And this particular piece comes from page 7, and it's titled The Man in the Arena. So he originally had given this speech in April of 1910. And so that's a really long time ago.
Yeah, just past the 110-year anniversary.
110-year anniversary of The Man in the Arena. And I remember posting this to my social media maybe about a year or two ago, and I got a lot of feedback on it where people were like,
It's a great quote.
Yeah, they loved it. So we thought we would just start with the reading of this quote. And thanks to Jordan being a high school English teacher for the last 15 years, he's got a great reading voice, and we're going to let him read it so that you know what we're talking about.
All right. Well, I hope my voice does justice. So this is just a portion of a much fuller speech that he delivered.
Correct.
Okay. Here it comes. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat.
So since the speech was given in 1910, it has been quoted by many famous people, men and women throughout history. It's been the inspiration behind speeches, songs, books, even Cadillac commercials. There's actually one a few years ago that they're saying this in the background. It's got to be John Hamm because I'm trying to remember what it is, but I think it's him. But it's also been given in speeches by Nelson Mandela, Richard Nixon, Brene Brown, who wrote a book called Daring Greatly. There was that little bit of Daring Greatly in the quote, but she's also used parts of this speech in a Netflix special and in her TED Talks. Mm-hmm. Who else was? And Mark DeRosa from the Washington Nationals. I mean, there's just a bunch of people, Barack Obama, who have used parts of this speech. So we're looking at 100 plus years later, there's still relevance to this quote. And I think there's a lot of great connections to the relentless pursuit, this life worth living, and what we're trying to do and what we're inspiring others to do is, you know, to get in the arena.
Get in the arena. Okay, so my first question for you.
Okay.
What is the arena?
I think the arena is different for all of us. I think for some people, the arena is our jobs. I think for other people, the arena is our family. For some, the arena is our community. So the arena is different for everybody.
I was thinking about that, too. Like it's a great metaphor, but it's I think there's two facets. There's the arena, and then there's the sideline or the spectator scene, right? And so the arena could mean, like you said, like anything for anybody, but it's the person who's engaged somehow versus watching others who are engaged.
Yeah, I think that it draws a line where there's the man that's in the arena who is, he's daring and he's being brave and he's trying, he's being courageous. He's probably making mistakes. He's falling down, but he's getting back up and he's trying. So whatever that pursuit is, he's persisting. Mm-hmm. While there's this other group of people who are on the sidelines just watching. They're too afraid to get in there and do what he's doing. Too afraid to fail, maybe to look silly, but, you know, they're on the outside.
Yeah. You know, one thing that this struck for me, it struck a lot of chords with me, but one thing that conjured to my mind was kind of who I feel like I used to be, in a sense. And we've talked about this before, where I was very bookish. Like, I felt very comfortable kind of just reading and knowing a lot. But then it struck me maybe about a decade ago or so that I could I could read and become an expert on anything, but it didn't really mean much until I applied it, until I engaged with the world in some way. Like, I could read everything there is to know about snowboarding, but unless I actually get on a snowboard and try it, like, what really is the purpose of that knowledge, of that information? I could, you know, critique other snowboarders, I could know the whole history of snowboarding, but it doesn't seem like it has a great deal of value until there's some degree of application of that.
Well, and I think that also speaks to your profession as a teacher, right? In order to be a teacher, you need to master the material. And the best way to show mastery over something is by doing it and by teaching it. Mm. Anyone could read that book in front of a class and ask them questions, but until you've mastered the material and can teach them what it means, you've shown no mastery over anything until you can do that. Mm. So I think that's an interesting parallel.
Yeah. It's like you can gain knowledge from from consuming it, from reading about it, you can gain knowledge from experience, and both have value. But it seems like the man in the arena, or I'd say the woman in the arena, like whoever's in the arena, is engaged in gathering experience that you can't get from just reading about it or just having a passive knowledge of it.
Right. Well, and it's funny, as just the title, The Man in the Arena, the first thing that I picture is, I picture Russell Crowe in The Gladiator. Okay? That's like the first image.
Because he's literally a man in an arena.
Literally the man. It's an arena. The spectators are around him. And there's that one scene where he says, you know, he throws his hands up and he's like, are you not entertained? And people are kind of like booing him a little bit because they're like mad because he's just like, in a minute flat, like just like slaughtered everybody in there. And they're like mad because they're there to be entertained by his efforts and maybe even like watch him die at that point. Yeah. That's kind of what they're expecting. And then when he breaks their expectations by like just killing it, they're just like, wait, what? So it's interesting to see like the spectators aren't necessarily cheering him on. The way that you think that they should for what he's just done.
Like they're just trying to consume his exploits for entertainment, but he's the one actually exerting effort in that instance.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you have a question for, I have questions for you.
Well, I have questions.
Okay.
So it made me think of Aristotle. Because Aristotle says, okay. I know, he makes fun of me. I always tell him he's like too like in the clouds and he's kind of out there.
I've edited blog posts.
Specifically because I've told him that he's not relatable.
References to ancient philosophers. That's okay.
So according to Aristotle, courage is the first of all virtues because without courage, nothing else is possible. How do you think this applies specifically to the man in the arena, to our lives, to what we're titling The Relentless Pursuit? How do you see that fitting?
I want to reference the quote a little bit because courage plays a part in stepping into the arena. I think it's not in the quote, but like what it kind of shows to me is that the critic or the person on the sideline is taking the easy job, and it's in a sense maybe a sign of weakness to jeer from the sideline. Anybody can do that, right? You don't need any particular skill or experience to stand on the sideline and critique someone else's attempts. But I think it takes courage to get into the arena, and this is going to lead into my next question too, because you could fail. You can't fail as a critic, but you can fail if you try something. And to me, that's what the arena represents, is the person who is working, who is engaged, who is trying. And this quote doesn't talk about success. It talks about victory or defeat, or success or failure. And I think that's the important thing that is essential to take from this, is that it's not about the outcome, it's about the attempt. And for us, I think that embodies the relentless pursuit. Like, it's not the relentless success, but it's that journey along the way and what you learn from and those experiences that you get. So this leads into my question, which is, I think many of us, and I know you would agree with the statement that it's better to try and fail than to never have tried at all. But why is that the case? Like, in my mind, if you try something and you fail, that takes you backwards from where you began. But if you don't try and you just stay where you're at, like, isn't that better than if you try and fail?
Well, I think that's funny because I think that's the way that most people think. It's, I'm comfortable here. This is okay here. People have recognized where I am here is respectable.
It's like comfortable.
Right?
It's okay.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, that's great. That's where you're at. But then when you try and do something and maybe get knocked down, we're afraid of being kind of judged. We're afraid of losing status, money,
of
power.
That jeering critic.
Yes. And so people can, sometimes when we take that leap forward and we fall, people can see those things and see them in a way that shows our weaknesses. So then we have to, you know, we're trying to save face, as we want everyone to see us in our best light, putting our best foot forward. And we're afraid for people to see that sometimes we're going to try for something and it's not going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there is that negative social outcome. I think there's other negative outcomes too. It could be a negative financial outcome if you put money towards something and then it doesn't pan out. Or it could be, you know, you go for a promotion that does, you know, maybe gets awarded to somebody else. I think there's other negatives where when you put yourself out there, you can end up maybe further behind than when you began. So, and I know we've done some things that have worked out really well, but we've also tried some things that the net gain was negative, and we're kind of scratching our heads afterwards, like, what was that all for? So what do you feel like, so just as a follow-up, like, what do you feel like a person does gain by trying and failing? According to this quote,
I think there's knowledge and experience in failure. And it's not something that in the moment when failure happens, we're like, yes, like I totally destroyed this. And, you know, I know there's a lesson, you know, you're not excited about it. But it does allow you to then use that experience the next time in moving forward. Mm-hmm. And so no one wants failure, but when it does come, it does prepare us for what's next. And another step, and maybe another attempt. Hmm. Or it proves to us that maybe there shouldn't be another attempt.
Yeah. That's what Roosevelt says here. Teddy R. says, who comes short again and again? Because there's no effort without error and shortcoming. And so there's no, you know, in this quote, there's no reference of guaranteed success either. But it seems like the effort, regardless of the outcome, is more valuable than what he refers to as the timid souls who don't know victory or defeat. So it's almost better to know defeat than to know nothing.
Well, and everybody is always comparing themselves to the next person's highlight reel. So whether people are looking at their friends or a neighbor or someone that they know, right, they're seeing only the good things, right? They're seeing like the new car or a new job promotion, but people mm-hmm. don't understand that sometimes those are laced with a series of disappointments to get there.
Yeah, and it's very easy to see, especially with celebrities, but I think social media accelerates that as well too, because we can literally post our personal highlight reels online, and we're not really posting a lot about our failures and shortcomings. And so you look at everyone else's life and think, man, that looks amazing.
Yeah, I would agree. I have a question.
Fire away.
All right, so we're talking about the man in the arena, and it starts with having the courage to step into the arena. And I think that's one thing that this quote maybe doesn't start with or even address, is having the balls to step in. Maybe that's not the best choice of words.
Okay,
for
well, it's out there. Yeah.
All right. But I think a lot of times people make the mistake of calling people confident. That, like, because you step in the arena, you're a confident person.
Yeah.
And so I would argue that just because you have the courage to step in the arena doesn't mean you're confident in moving forward, or you're confident that it's going to be a success. So where does confidence come from?
Well, I don't know if confidence ever needs to be a part of the picture. I mean, it just seems like what you had said, maybe courage enough to step from the sidelines into the arena is all that needed. I'm a big fan of the phrase, fake it till you make it. And did I steal your thunder? Were you going to include that?
No, I was not.
But to me, that reference is like, you don't have to, if you want to step into the arena, you don't have to have all the answers. In fact, part of the joy and the thrill of the arena is figuring things out as you go along. And I think that's important for people to recognize, is you don't have to have it all together. You don't have to have the confidence to feel like you've got all the answers. And that person probably doesn't really exist. But what really does exist is a person courageous enough to step into the arena, to get their hands dirty, figuring things out.
Yeah. Well, and I might argue that then, although confidence doesn't come from any one thing, confidence does come from experience. So I just think of, like, my business. The first time I did an event, I mean, I was I woke up nervous. I was sweating the whole time.
You still get nervous.
Yeah. And I think that's, like, a good way to be is when you're in business, you know, there's a little bit of the unknown. And so there's always, like, a little bit of fear. But each and every time I do another event, I gain a little bit more confidence from the experience. And that doesn't mean that those events are, like, without errors or shortcomings. Or not that an event hasn't gone well, but things like, oh, the next time I'm here, I would do this differently. A different approach, a different tool in my tool belt that I would bring with me that would make something easier. So I think confidence comes from experience. And you can't gain that experience without stepping into the arena. Like, you can learn the experience from books or from a podcast or from a course.
And unless
you're applying them in a real-time situation and chasing after something, you're not going to have that confidence. Mm-hmm. It comes with time and practice.
So you have to do it.
You have to do it.
Mm-hmm. All right. I've got a few good questions for you. All right. I like this one. Who would you say is a man or woman in the arena that you admire? This could be any, like a historical figure, a fictitious figure, a friend, a modern celebrity, like.
This is one of those things where you probably should ask me ahead of time so I could
ponder it for
3 or 4 minutes so I could have a more tangible example in my own real life and, you know, maybe someone that's very well known.
All right, so let's speak more generically. Who's the type of person that you admire who's in the arena?
I think the type of people that I admire are people who are uniquely them. You know, we've most recently interviewed Leo Spazieri, and he said that the first couple times he did, like, a podcast interview or had to, like, teach to, like, a bigger audience, he was so focused on trying to be like other people in his realm, in his arena, that he felt like he failed. And the guy said, hey, look, listen, we like you because of who you are. And so do you. And if you don't sound like everybody else and if you don't talk like everyone else, that's fine. We're not here to be like somebody else. We're here because we like you. So to me, people who are just unashamedly themselves. And I think of friends that I have like this, that they're just them. And I really appreciate those kinds of people because I'm not looking for them to be like me or to be like somebody else I know. I want to learn from them the way that they are because I think everybody has a little something that you can take from.
I would answer this question maybe like without naming any specific people. Like I have always admired kind of your average community member who becomes a public servant at the local level. I've admired that because they're engaging in the community and filling in a spot that needs to be filled by someone, and we could critique them. Like, I don't always agree with the decisions that they make. You know, some of them can be more self-serving, and there's plenty of reasons to maybe critique the people that, you know, step up as their leaders. But anyone on a community board, on a school board, any citizen that is willing to step into that bigger role, is to me someone who is getting engaged. And maybe slightly related is I always think of the local coaches who have coached our kids. There's a sideline full of parents, and I've admired the coach who is just another one of the parents who steps off the sideline onto the court or onto the field and is willing to assume responsibility for that team. And I think metaphorically that works within communities and, you know, within organizations. That person who's saying, all right, I'll get off the sideline and I'll take whatever I have and try to make the most of it with this team or with this community.
And I love that too. I mean, now that you say that, every year, and you've been the coach sometimes, and maybe you don't know much more than the kids know, but you know, you've taken the time to like say, all right, I'm instead of just sitting on the sideline watching my kids play, I'll step in, I'll give the knowledge that I have, I will guide in the capacity that I have, and I will do that. And not everybody does that.
Yeah. I think that's a small thing, but I admire the people who, you know, are taking on much bigger responsibilities and much bigger tasks that no one necessarily, you know, asked or required of them, but they're taking an interest in good beyond themselves.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people, they do that for certain causes that are close to them.
Yeah.
And it's things that they do every single year, every, you know, certain times of the year, whether it's like fundraisers or walks or ways to show support for different communities. And I think that's really important too, because you don't have to do that. Mm-hmm. And you could be a spectator on the side that just maybe donates money or, you know, buys the t-shirt, but they're... Yeah.
Or does nothing or critiques that, yeah.
Right, but they're the ones who are... like formulating an idea, an event, and pushing it through, gathering other people for the cause, and moving it forward.
Yeah. But for me, in the broadest sense, the arena refers to anything that is any like tangible engagement. So it could be the person who tries and then just fill in the blank with anything. It could be they're trying a new business idea. They're trying a personal goal, like they want to run a marathon. They're trying to grow a garden for the first time. Like, the arena doesn't have to be big, and it doesn't have to be...
World-changing.
It doesn't even have to be extroverted. It's the engagement with something rather than the sidelining or the wishing they were engaged, but not taking that first step to try it.
Yeah, or the person who buys the treadmill and looks at it but never puts their foot on it, right. You know? Very interesting. Here's one of the questions I have. So we've talked about courage. We've talked about the courage to step into the arena, gaining confidence, doing something. That's all part of it. I think we should spend a little bit more time on maybe life not being about winning or losing, right? We don't step in the arena. We don't step in the arena to lose.
No.
That's not the point in any of this, whether we're running a marathon or starting a business. We don't step in with the idea of wanting to lose. But I think part of the shift has to be that life isn't also about winning. Mm-hmm. That it's about the experience in between those two things and what we're striving towards. Mm-hmm. Do you have thoughts on that idea, that notion of like life isn't just winning or losing? Like, right, if you win, what happens? Like, what is winning?
Yeah. Life is like Monopoly. Like, you could win the whole thing and then you got to put it all back in the box.
Right. So how do we focus more on the pursuit and not... like the victory or the loss?
Yeah. I think that comes with, you know, some of the philosophy that undergirds the conversations that we have, that idea of being engaged and of trying. You're right. Like, no one expects or hopes to lose as the outcome of whatever they're trying to engage in. But it is certainly reality. And I think that's what makes it far more interesting, is there's a risk of losing. If you're not in the game, then you're not going to lose. And there's a certain safety with that. But the idea that you could lose, kind of like when I tell the kids, like, if you play this game, you could lose, and I don't want any tears at the end, right? It's about having fun. I think that life is similar, where there's plenty of things we could engage in, and we could lose in some big ways. But there is a preference for that over not ever being in a position that you could lose.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about this in your blog post about like risk aversion. We're like, we're afraid.
We'd rather keep what we have.
As opposed to having some sort of risk where it could be taken away. Mm-hmm. And so I think the mentality shift has to be that if there's not some risk associated with what we're doing, then maybe we're doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. To do the same thing repeatedly with no change in outcome, like, it's safe and it's okay, and that's what some people do. But if you're looking for a fuller, richer experience, if you're looking to learn, if you're looking to improve, then maybe some risk has to be involved.
Yeah. And I'm a fan of like trying things and then walking away from them too. I know, like, you and I for a long time like felt compelled to read an entire book from beginning to end until it dawned on us, like, oh, well, if we don't like the book, we don't have to continue reading it.
That was like 5 years ago for me, because I'm such, like, I'm loyal to a fault. So I'm like, you start a book, then you need to, you read every word from cover to cover, and you can't just put it down. And you told me, you're like, well, if you don't like it, don't read it.
And I think that's the case with other things that we engage in as well, where it's important to try. Like, you never know until you try. And if you're not enjoying that pursuit, or you don't feel committed to it, or you do feel like you're losing maybe more than you expected, then you can turn aside from that and then go pursue something else. Or if you just tire of it, if you're like, oh, I've contributed time to this, now I would like to go contribute time to that. I think that's fair as well.
Yeah, I would agree. Do you have more questions?
I have some questions that I'd like to talk about. I don't feel like we can do justice kind of on the air here, but I want to talk about like us. And so one question that maybe we don't need to answer now, but we'll continue in our own dialogues, is what is the arena for us? Are we on the sidelines, or are we in the arena? Or what arenas are we currently in, and what arenas should we probably get in that we've been, you know, towing the sideline for long enough?
Oh, nothing like roasting us over the fire live on our podcast.
Right. So that's why I think that that's going to require a little more like reflection and dialogue between us before we can really answer. But that's the kind of question I would encourage a lot of listeners to engage with as well, too. It's kind of exciting to think, yeah, I'm going to get into the arena, but what are the arenas that are open and available and we're, you know, long overdue for getting in? And what are the ones where maybe we're even like the critics of, having never really tried that or engaged in it ourselves?
I think those are great questions. I mean, those are great questions for the two of us, that those are great questions for everybody else. Yeah, what arenas are we the critic in? Mm-hmm. We've never tried, we've never even put ourselves out there, but we're going to criticize everybody else who's right. been trying and getting it wrong according to us.
Right.
So that's...
Or maybe reverse that too and think about who are the men and women in our lives who are in the arena that instead of being the critic of, we can be the cheerleader for. Because his quote doesn't reference any cheerleaders, but I think that can be an important role of someone on the sideline.
Right. It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles.
Right.
But we're there to help raise those people up or lift them up.
Yeah.
I think that's great. I think that's a great way to be. I'm also thinking about, too, what arenas are we in? And instead of having that like Russell Crowe image, right? I am not standing in the middle, slaying it, throwing my hands up.
I wouldn't mind having that image, but that's okay.
But like, I'm sometimes like the guy who's like in the corners of the arena, like, you know, backing up from everybody because I lack the experience, I lack the confidence, and I lack the courage. I am in the arena, mm-hmm. but I am not contributing in the arena. Mm-hmm. How do I push myself forward to take more risks?
Yeah. Or is there a way to, you know, team up with Russell Crowe and, you know, let him do the heavy work, but we could learn as we go until we can take over that position?
Yeah, I think that's great.
All right. Well, like many of our conversations, I think we're ending with more questions than answers, but it is inspiring just to dialogue through this with you. And I hope you guys have had a good time, you know, listening to some of these ideas and some of these questions as well. So what takeaways do we have at this point in our conversation?
I think one of the biggest ones is that greatness isn't what you achieve. Greatness is what you do. And so I may be able to do great things, but they are not going to warrant a summer home in the Hamptons or a trophy. But that doesn't mean that the things that I am personally pursuing and doing, whether it's for my family or for my kids, my friends, in my industry, aren't great things. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we let that stop us. That it's not what we achieve, but it's what we do. Repeatedly do.
Yeah. And I also would also say, like, if, you know, when we're old and kind of looking back, it's more rewarding to say, well, I at least tried it. I engaged with it. This was my lofty goal, and maybe I didn't meet that, but here's how far I was able to get on that path towards achieving it. Okay. And that's better than saying, you know, maybe better than saying that I got that summer home in the Hamptons, and better than saying that you know, I didn't try anything at all.
Okay. I think the second one would be that confidence comes from experience, and even failures are the kinds of experiences, not that we should strive for, but that when they do happen, we should make the most of it.
Mm-hmm. Like, failure is okay as long as you're learning from it and seeing that as a chance to, like, get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah. Just having the courage to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think the last one is that life isn't about winning or losing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any takeaways that you'd like to add to that?
I just want to echo those. And, you know, we're going to have this quote as well as some of the questions that we asked each other, some of the questions that we didn't get a chance to ask one another in our show notes as well. And we're interested in hearing more of your thoughts and perspectives on the man in the arena. What are the arenas of life? What are some ways that you are engaged? Maybe some ways that you're ready to begin engaging in. We want you to share your comments on our YouTube link, or you can share a 5-star rating and review on anywhere you may listen to your podcasts. Please get in touch with us if you haven't visited our website yet. It is therelentlesspursuitpodcast.com, and we are interested in continuing to talk to you as well as talking to one another about these important things of life. So thank you so much for tuning in to episode 5, and we hope to see you back again soon.
See you later.